maybe you could take a crack at talking about, you know, how you would explain to a general medical oncologist or somebody like me kind of how these assays are done and really what's going on at Sarah Cannon right now, which I think is really an outstanding operation in terms of the whole concept of bringing this into practice. So if you want to go through that.
Great. Very happy to. Thanks, Neil. So briefly, I wanted to just discuss the overview that we've got here of multiplex genomic assays and methodologies, use cases, limitations, and cases where we think that this has a lot of really great clinical utility. So very briefly, we'll just go through some of the very commonly used NGS platforms. We'll talk through serial NGS testing, what that looks like, the rationales, benefits, limitations. Talk a little bit about the usage of NGS and how that's grown over time, and studies that have come out analyzing patients who get matched to targeted therapies based on these NGS reports and what that looks like. And then we'll finish up with kind of where this is going, the horizon here of these novel biomolecules that are being analyzed, things like exosomes and circulating tumor cells and things like that in the liquid biopsy space. So it's a really exciting time in the NGS world as more and more companies are coming up with better and better technologies to analyze tumor DNA. This table here shows some of the most commonly used NGS platforms, including things like Foundation Medicine that was discussed in that survey, Caris, and others. And the big takeaway from this is that they're each a little different. Each test offers a different gene set. They analyze the genes a little bit differently, and they also differ in the coverage. Some of them offer whole exonal coverage, and others are just hotspots. And so knowing what you're ordering when you go into a test is really important in understanding what the test resulted back. For instance, if you order a test that only tests for fusions in one or two of the NTRK genes, you're only going to get results back for those two genes, and you might miss whatever might be present in that third NTRK gene. I think that another thing for general oncologists to be aware of is that these tests vary in cost, the sample requirements. You have some new technologies coming out that are offering 2 or 3 day turnaround times on samples smaller than a grain of rice. And, you know, I think the jury's still out on how well those assays perform, but the market is getting inundated with these companies coming out with the next and best types of tests. Turnaround time is always something that we've heard is a barrier to ordering these. Folks want the answers as quickly as they can get them. And then also you have to be aware of, is my assay detecting specifically germline mutations, as was pointed out earlier? Some of these can be detected, and even though it's a somatic assay, these germline mutations can be detected. And end users have to be aware of that and at least savvy enough to question whether or not that particular mutation in BRCA or ATM could be a germline mutation. And the last thing I'll add is most of the companies that we talk about do DNA-based next-generation sequencing. But as we've talked about earlier and will further, RNA sequencing is emerging as a very important tool to detect complex fusions in large genes, especially in things like NTRK. And I'll go down just a small bit of a rabbit hole there with NTRK to show what that means and what it looks like. Certain tests do and don't detect fusions in genes like NTRK. So NTRK is a very large gene, and the gene is primarily composed of these huge intronic regions. So in the DNA, you're sequencing both, you've got introns and exons, and it's only through splicing that you get rid of the introns and you get exons. So mRNA is the target that you would want to sequence to get rid of all of those big complex introns. So just to follow along, that top line is the entire NTRK1 gene, and these vertical black lines are the exons. The space between these vertical lines and these large intronic regions, and that's replicated in NTRK1, 2, and 3. So NTRK-based sequencing doesn't do a good job in covering these really long sequencing regions that need to happen in order to detect these complex fusions. And so companies have done a really great job of optimizing their assays for some, but not all, of the NTRK genes. And I'm just using NTRK as an example here. But realizing those limitations, they've started adding in RNA-based sequencing as a part of their routine offerings. Just because someone says, I've ordered NGS on my patient, depending on the vendor, you're getting a very different result back, especially when it comes to detecting NTRK fusions. So again, start with the end in mind when you're thinking about ordering these tests. What do I want to detect? And if NTRK is something that you're looking for, then you have to make sure that you're ordering a test that covers these with high degrees of fidelity. So this is a question that we get asked routinely. Should I do a tissue test? Should I do a liquid-based test? And as was discussed earlier, I think there are pros and cons to each of these. Right now, from an FDA perspective, we've got FDA-approved tissue-based tests. The liquid biopsies are continuing to emerge as incredibly important, but don't have yet that level of scrutiny on them. Just to kind of walk through the pros and cons here, tissue biopsies, they're clinically validated. They are invasive, though. Very difficult to perform serially, as you need new and fresh tissue biopsies to do that. One of the things that we've learned is tumor heterogeneity gets lost in some of these tissue-based tests as you're detecting mutations in one tumor and beyond that in a very narrow slice of that one tumor. And you don't get the whole picture of metastatic disease when taking a look just at a tissue biopsy. It's also impractical for periodic monitoring of treatment response, but does allow for histological diagnosis and staging. And as we discussed earlier, it's still the gold standard for tumor characterization. Liquid biopsies, on the other hand, are less invasive, easily repeatable. They have the potential to reveal tumor heterogeneity and give you this kind of comprehensive, complete picture of the disease. So pros and cons on each. And I think in the community setting, at least with our general medical oncologists that we work with, the liquid biopsies are gaining a lot of momentum because it's easy. You can do it in the office with a quick blood draw. I will say that there are specific use cases, I think, when liquid biopsies are most meaningful, particularly when you don't have any tissue, you've exhausted tissue, or you've got insufficient tumor within the sample that you did biopsy, or if you've got patients with bone-only disease or are wanting to kind of regularly monitor response to certain therapies and you can see the emergence of resistance mutations. So there are use cases for that. And as we'll discuss, beyond the detection of actionable mutations, there's emerging literature regarding other uses of liquid biopsies, particularly in prognosis determination, certainly as we discussed in the selection of treatment and monitoring of treatment efficacy and relapse, but also there's a big space in early detection. So these are your at-risk population of patients who don't yet have cancer. Liquid biopsies are emerging as a potential use for early detection of cancers. That's still very early work, but I think something we'll see in the clinic in the future. Another question that we get asked a lot is, the liquid biopsy result that I got is different than the tissue biopsy result that I got. What gives? And the simple answer that I try to give back is, well, there are two separate tests. The technologies are different, the analytes are different, and so you should expect some discordance there. The issue comes when one test detects a driver mutation and the other one doesn't detect a driver mutation. Which one do we believe? But I think that the overarching story here is discordance is to be expected based on the technologies. I've pulled a couple of papers here just to show that in one case, the percent of tissue alterations found in cell-free DNA was between 20 and 30%. So there is a large discordance there. But like I said, I think the technologies and the actual tests themselves are the reason why those are different. And so it's what we talked about earlier, that believe what's there, but be skeptical of things that might not be there. And that's kind of a theme that we give back when doctors have these questions for us.